Welcome to the Success is Subjective podcast series brought to you by ParentTrainers.com, presented by Lilly Consulting. I'm your host, Joanna Lilly. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Vanya Matthews. Vanya is founder of V. Matthews Therapeutic and Educational Consulting. In her 10-year practice as a consultant, Vanya has helped hundreds of families allocate appropriate treatment options for teens and young adults struggling with mental and behavioral health issues. Now, Vanya is an expert in researching, designing, and implementing interventions. Her knowledge of therapeutic programs and resources is beyond extensive. Her expertise with teens, young adults, and their families comes from experience working in a variety of therapeutic settings, including clinical therapist for the Adolescent Intensive Outpatient Program and Dual Diagnosis Partial Hospitalization Program at Loma Linda University's Behavioral Medicine Center, child and adolescent clinical social worker at St. Helena Hospital, and family therapist at Caritas Counseling. Vanya holds an MA in school counseling from La Sierra University and an MS in marriage and family therapy from Loma Linda University. Having developed a resiliency and strength-based approach to transitioning students home post-treatment, Vanya holds expertise and experience in helping families navigate the challenges young people and their families face when a young person returns home after treatment. Most recently, Vanya was honored by one of her alma maters, La Sierra University, with the Rising Star Award, which is acknowledging her contributions to the difficult challenges involved in evaluating teens, young adults, and their families, and developing plans to address developmental, emotional, and scholastic growth. Vanya's warm, creative, and mindful approach is informed by her regular training and participation in improvisational theater and studying, practicing and teaching vinyasa yoga and mindfulness concepts. She is a woman of many wonders, so let's not wait any longer. Here's Vanya. All right, Vanya, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you so much for having me here.
I'm just like so excited.
I'm so excited too.
So let's just jump in. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up, and what the expectations were around post-secondary education.
Okay, where I'm from. Well, I grew up in Oregon, and then we moved in 86 to Northern California, to the Bay Area. But the thing that I would say where I'm from, how do I put this? I was raised in a religious background. So I was raised mm-hmm. Seventh-day Adventist. And it isn't just like going to church on Sunday and then forgetting about that the rest of the week. When you're raised Adventist, you go to Adventist schools. And, you know, that's just, you have Adventist friends. And then on church, church is on the weekend. And that's what you're doing. So where I'm from is that culture. And also, and also my parents are Brazilian. And so I'm also from that culture. So where I lived didn't really inform sort of anything about me, but where I'm from are those two cultures mixed together.
Right.
So I hope that makes sense. And in terms of the expectation around post-secondary is, especially if you're Seventh-day Adventist, you are going on to an Adventist college, and you've got like maybe four or five choices of which college, because you will be going to an Adventist one, because at the time, you don't even know that anything else exists or that you could even get in or have options. I had no clue. And so you kind of get funneled into that system, which isn't necessarily bad or good. But I knew at some point, I mean, I really wondered if I had the chops for college. I never felt like I was an excellent student till maybe like junior year in high school, where things changed for me, because I do have a pretty severe learning difference when it comes to numbers. Very discalculated person. I know there's a better terminology, but I'm just, you know, that's what I call it. So that was not fun. And I thought, well, I don't even know that I should go to college. But when senior year arrived, they kind of funnel you. The Adventist school system funnels you. They're like, you're going to PUC, Pacific Union College, or La Sierra University, because those are the two in California. And they will pretty much accept you. So that was good, because I remember taking an ACT or an SAT or writing an essay. They're just like, okay, you're in our system. You're coming. We want you. Here's some scholarships. And, you know, come. So I did. So that was the expectation, was you're going to get funneled into that. And my parents just went with it. And as long as I could get scholarships, because I come from, we didn't have much. And so they worked really hard on, you know, had every like Latin American person scholarship and incentivized in different ways for me to come the different colleges. And then I selected Pacific Union College.
That's awesome. All right. So tell me, was Pacific Union, that was the name of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify. Pacific Union College.
So PUC. That's mm-hmm. interesting. You went like straight out of high school. And how was your college experience?
How was my college experience? I would say it was great in some ways. It was awesome to be away from home. I wanted that independence. I was really surprised that the classes actually seemed easier than high school because they were more focused and there were syllabus. And so I know what was expected of me. And so all of that was really good. And there was a lot of structure. It was also good to be with other kids who had been raised how I was raised. And the expectation was, of course, that you were going to find a husband and, you know, move on into a role of wife. And so that was part of why you were at college. So that was part of it. The expectation there. But it was a really good education. At the time, I had no idea what I wanted to be, and I thought I was going to be a weather woman, so I thought I'd go into communications. But then I was really fascinated by why people talk and communicate the way they do, or mm-hmm. why do people think what they think, and just meaning in general. And I had no idea that that was psychology. So I worked myself all 4 years through a communications degree and found out about psychology later. And I was like, oh, I think that's what I meant, but it was too late. But yeah, the communications major was good in its own way. There was a great aspect of learning to speak in front of other people and just honing and refining that. So interesting experience. Yep.
And did you go straight from your undergraduate in communications to like the work world? Did you go right into an advanced degree? What was post-secondary education looking like for you?
Well, it was a bit dismal when I got out to realize what you can do with the communications major, which wasn't much. So what happened for me is that I actually became a receptionist at a place called Anderson Consulting in Palo Alto. And it was a 12-line phone that I'd have to answer.
Oh, my goodness.
And this was just, I thought to myself, I really paid this much on my student loans to be sitting here with this phone. This is terrible. I've made a just terrible mistake. But it actually taught me a lot of patience because a 12-line phone just ringing all the time, it's like you really get your bearings. So while I was disappointed, I did learn skills. And at that time, you know, you had to start learning how to use the internet because it was a new thing. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of time between calls to start, quote unquote, surfing the internet. Surfing the web. So I got really good at all of that. And then I actually decided to be a missionary for a while because that's what you do when you're Adventist and you don't go to grad school and you didn't get married. You go be a missionary. And then from there, I then got an interesting sort of recruitive experience over to Loma Linda University or La Sierra University first mm-hmm. to actually come recruit in their School of Education. And so then I ended up doing that, and I did some fundraising for Loma Linda University Medical Center as well. And that's actually how I found my next career.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so back up. You were a college recruiter.
A little bit. Okay. I mean, yeah, it was a non-glamorous position, but it was just for the School of Education for La Sierra University. Yeah. And so I'd just drive around to all these high schools and do presentations on finding your future and what your future was going to be about and telling them about the School of Education. And for that, they basically scholarshiped me for my first master's degree.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really interesting.
Okay. So what was your first master's in?
So the first master's was in school counseling. And it kind of happened because I had been doing fundraising and, you know, I kind of got into, okay, I would write this little magazine called Expressions Magazine, and I'd go interview people. And I was writing for the hospital at the time, and so I'd interview them, and they would, you know, really emote during the interview and thank me afterwards, and wow, this was really healing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I wonder if I could be like a therapist or something, but I didn't know where that would connect. So I'm like, maybe school counseling. I mean, I don't know that I could go get an advanced degree. I mean, who am I to do that? Right. But then school counseling was what they offered me. And actually it was going to be, school psychology, but because I'm not a numbers person and because there's so much testing involved, I'm like, you know what? Just give me that 1 year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do school counseling and we're all good. Let's just call it good. So that happened. So that was my first master's degree.
And then obviously that's like, you know, long pregnant pause. There was another master's degree.
Right.
So what did you get another degree in?
Well, the interesting thing is that while I had been working in fundraising and while I was writing expressions, I actually did a piece on the Behavioral Medicine Center at Loma Linda. Hmm. And I remember that was one of the most intriguing stories. And I made a really great connection with their intensive outpatient program for the adolescents. And so I remember when I got my master's degree in school counseling, and then I was like, what the hell do I do with this? Mm-hmm. I called up Susan Hagerman, who I had interviewed for the story that I wrote. And I said, you know, I have a master's now, and I'd love to learn how to be, you know, counselor to young people. Does this work? And she's like, of course. And she interviewed me and hired me, and that's how I became a therapist. But lo and behold, about a year into it, I felt like I was just winging it. I mean, school counseling does not a therapist make at all. And so even though she had great faith in me, there were some days I was leading my group and I was just making it up as I went. And it's not that it was bad. It was just, am I doing therapy? Is that like, where is my integrity if I'm not really a therapist? Sure. And I'm calling myself a therapist. So because I was working at the Behavioral Medicine Center, they offered a discounted rate if you wanted to go to Loma Linda. And so I applied for the marriage and family therapy doctorate program and decided to go into that, and they accepted me. And so lo and behold, I went into that, but decided, you know, midway, I'm like, I'm just done with school. I got to go make money because I'm just getting a lot of student loans, even with this discount. So that's how you get two masters in your 20s. But I tell you, graduations are the most addictive thing ever because you really feel like you accomplish something when they play that music. And I miss graduating.
If you could just be in a room where they played the music, would that make you feel like you had a sense of accomplishment?
Or super accomplished. In fact, you know, I just play it for myself every now and again when I get down. No, I'm kidding. I really don't. But I should.
there's your pick-me-up. That's amazing.
Right. Yep.
That is amazing.
Pomp and circumstances. I made it. I did it. Jumped through that hoop. Student loans.
So certainly no more degrees. Like, you are done, at least for the time being. But then you're like, okay, I'm done, like, for real. So going back to, you get your master's in marriage and family therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what do you do after that?
Yeah. And so at the time, I'd been really fortunate because of my first master's, I was able to work through my second master's and get my internship hours and my trainee hours all while I was working as a therapist at Loma Linda.
Wow.
So I actually got a salary, which nobody ever does with their, you know, MFT newbie degree. So I could have stayed working there forever if I wanted to. And I was a therapist in the intensive outpatient for adolescents. Mm-hmm. And then I work with, you know, eating disorder. I work with adults. And then we started a schizophrenia first break track, which was really compelling too. But I was also on this relationship with somebody who was in the doctoral program with me, and we got along fabulously, but it was not meant to be, and I could not extract myself from this, and so I needed to move away. And so I, you know, I broke off with the program because of that. And, you know, I just remember I had these, you know, wonderful, wonderful teachers who really cared, and they were these, you know, amazing warrior white women, and they're like, this is always what, you know, women of color do, you need to stay in the program. And I really appreciate that they wanted me to get my doctorate, but in my gut I kind of knew, okay, yeah, there's something going to come of these two things that I'm doing.
Yeah So tell us what happened.
Okay, what happened next is I went to Spain for a summer. And I was like, if I spent that much in student loans, what's another $5,000 going to be? Best money I ever spent. So I was then 30. I had broken off this engagement. I now had two masters. And the good thing is that I was still in the loving arms of Adventist system, right? So I look at Adventist Health and I'm like, well, who's hiring for a therapist? And lo and behold, the psych hospital over in Vallejo, California, was hiring for an adolescent social worker. So I ended up getting hired there. And I loved it. I wanted to call it a year in a psych hospital. It was the most intense job I've ever, ever had. And it only lasted for a year because midway through, actually, there was a therapeutic and educational consulting group that came to market the social workers. And they're like, yeah, there's, you know, programs all across the country. There's this thing called wilderness therapy. There's, you know, have you ever seen the back of Sunset Magazine and those ads for residential treatments? Like, we know all of those. And I was blown away because I thought, surely I thought the world of therapy was intensive outpatient.
Yeah.
So I, on my day off or my sick day, I lobbed them my resume and they ended up hiring me. And so I worked for them for 2 years and got a really good foundation in therapeutic and educational consulting. And then I just, you know, artistic differences. And it was 2008. And I just decided to go out on my own.
During the recession.
During the recession.
For anybody that is listening, 2008 was a rough year.
It was a good time.
But artistic differences be damned because it does not matter. Okay, so you're out on your own.
And now, year 14.
Wow.
Out on my own. Yep.
And who would you say at this point to, like, who do you serve? Tell the listeners in case they're not familiar with an educational or therapeutic consultant.
Sure. So basically, it's kind of where therapy leaves off, in that when you're going to go into therapy, you're going to do a process from week to week and you're going to have an ongoing dialogue. But your therapist isn't necessarily equipped to give you a lot of different resources of where you can go if you need more help or if you feel like you need a higher level of care, that type of thing. And so what I do basically is families find me when they have a child or a young adult that's in crisis, and then they're wondering, okay, what do we do? And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're already looking for a program, but they need some kind of direction. Mm-hmm. They need somebody who can basically get all the pieces of their story together, make sense of it, develop a theory, and then say, here's what I think you should do, and give them some paths to go on, but also really work with where they're at in their own process. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that may or may not result in some type of therapeutic placement.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then after that's the case management to make sure that whatever we came up with is in fact working and to some degree successful and that young person is getting better.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking too, as you're talking, like, there are certainly some therapists that we are surrounded by that do feel like they can make those recommendations. And oftentimes, you know, we're the ones doing like the palm to face where families attempted to fit that square peg in a round hole. And it would have been best if they had found you first.
Right.
But, you know, it happens how it happens. And so I think you actually did a really eloquent job of kind of describing what it is that we do. And another thing that made me appreciate your role is the fact that you have your clinical background makes it a very different experience for a family contacting you rather than somebody that may or may not have that clinical expertise. So I think that makes you stand out. And you're awesome. Minor, you know, like.
You're very kind. Very generous.
Well, so I'm just going to ask you point blank because I ask everybody this.
Yes.
14 years in consulting, which is so, like, I'm looking at that like, 14 years, it's going to be a while for me before I get to that point. But do you see yourself as successful?
I do. And I'm surprised. There's sometimes I look at my life and I'm like, wow, who am I that people come to me for counsel and take it seriously? And then, but I look at the results and sometimes the words that come out of my mouth and the plans that I come up with, I feel like, you know, come from a higher power and I feel really blessed. And I don't know. I think of myself as the vehicle for it. that it happens through me. But I think that in itself is success. And success is learning to listen. And I think in the beginning, I wanted to be all things to all people. And I wanted to give the counsel and tell them what to do. And I had to learn to really listen. And so part of the success that I feel now is that I can really hear and understand and attune to what's happening for people, mm-hmm. and then help them make a plan that they're comfortable with, that makes sense to them. So I'm proud of myself. My parents are really proud of me too. It's just nifty. And it's fun, you know, because stuff that I never thought would be within my grasp, like owning a home or, you know, paying off student loans or that type of stuff, has been able to happen. Of course, I'm a hoarder of money, but that's a whole other story for a different time. But yeah, I would say that, you know, the yeah, success. You know, there's still some days when I get burnt out, I do have a lot of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. And that's when I notice that I'm burnt out and I need to take some time away from what I do. And then I question my success and I'm just, you know, and then usually a couple days away and just reflecting or being by the ocean or, you know, doing something that I love that's not work related at all. Mm-hmm. And then I tend to regain my confidence and my love of what I do.
Yeah, it's the importance of self-care, right? Not Absolutely. Just for the perspective of success, but just like well-being and yeah. like the difference of thriving and surviving.
Right. And you're only as successful as whether your body's falling apart or not. So, you know, that's the measurement. I'm probably not that successful.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
But I'm getting there.
Yeah. Well, so we work with a lot of young people that are struggling. Yes. So it's a good segue to kind of close out, which is, you know, if you were to be able to give any piece of advice to a young person who is struggling in this day and age, what piece of advice would you give them? And if you want to, you can even expand on it as what piece of advice would you also give to a parent, mm-hmm. right? Or parenting unit of said struggling young person.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, awesome. Well, for the struggling young person, I mean, what I'd say is the same thing that was said to me. I remember it was in my early 20s. And at that time, I thought that I was going to be a pastor. Another story for another time. But I remember going to the chaplain that was teaching the class that I was in, Care for the Dying and Bereaved. And I really respected her, Dr. Carla Gober, and said, Carla, I don't understand what I'm doing here. I don't know what my path is, and I feel like a failure, and I feel like I'm wasting a lot of money, and I don't know. And she got this big white pad of paper out, and she drew this straight line, and then she drew another one next to it. It was a huge squiggly line, and she said, some people's path is like this. You know, they know what they want, they go, they get it. And some people's path is like this. Mm. And you're going to be that second person. And that's okay. That, too, has its own validity and gorgeousness. And don't be afraid of that. And it was just that she said that to me that took the fear away from it. Like, okay, this is going to come together, you know. And so I'd say to that young person, that may be you. You may be that squiggly line, but it will come together. I mean, I never knew that, you know, one random master's in school counseling, because I didn't want to do numbers, led to another, you know, master's, which led to something that confluenced together so well for therapeutic and educational consulting. You know, it was almost, it's funny because when I tell people about my background, you know, or some client will ask me, well, what qualifies you to do this? And I'll say in my very businessy voice, well, I have two master's degrees in, you know, therapeutic and in school counseling. And it's, I couldn't have planned it better. But the thing is, I didn't plan any of it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I would say is be open to that. Everything is going to come together in a way that you wouldn't expect. Put in the hard work. Say yes to things. Be willing to take some shit jobs because it's not always going to be great. Don't worry about, oh, am I doing the thing that's my passion that makes me happy? Not right away and not in your 20s, because everything's going to accumulate and you'll be mm-hmm. like, oh, hate this, love that. And then you start funneling yourself into that road. And above all else, be really kind and gracious and listen to the people who are trying to help you, because those are the people that open the doors for you.
I love that.
And then for parents,
I was going to say, does the same advice apply to the parents, or you want to say something else?
Yeah, I mean, for parents, I would say, this is so pragmatic, don't enable, like, don't open your wallet. Keep the. I grew up super stinking poor, and so there was nobody to rely on, and so I became really self-reliant. I mean, you hustle when there's nobody else to pick up the pieces for you, mm-hmm. and a lot of times I watch kids just kind of flounder because parents think that it's their duty to continue to support, and you know, kids can get extortive and say things like, "Oh, I'm going to go do A, B, and C terrible behavior if you don't do this to support mm-hmm. myself." You know, it's not always that drastic, but I would just say keep the wallet closed. You can give a little here and there, you know, be the home that they can go to wash their clothes and get a good meal and a hug from you. But that's really your role, because they've got to figure it out and they've got to have those skills come to them.
Oh, I love that. I think, I mean, beyond that piece of very profound advice for parents that are listening right now, the piece too that you mentioned for the young adults and kind of the list of here are some like really short and sweet pieces of advice, like take this in, absorb it, is really valuable. And I'm sure that at minimum one person is going to listen to this podcast and that story and that advice is going to resonate with them. So Vanya, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for interviewing me.
That's it for this week's Success is Subjective episode. Stay tuned for our next episode, where you can bet it'll be another amazing human sharing their very personal story with the world. You can follow me, Joanna, on Instagram at Lily Consulting and on Facebook at Lily Consulting LLC. Most importantly, though, check out the resources link on my website at lilyconsulting.com. And that's LILLEY consulting.com. Or you can just search on Google for Lily Consulting. You can also download and subscribe to listen to the Success is Subjective interviews on any popular podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Make sure you check out the show notes, where you'll find contact information, website details, links to articles, and all social media for our guest. Once again, thank you to ParentTrainers.com for sponsoring this podcast series. And thank you, our listener, for tuning in. And remember, there is no single path through life. Success is what you make it.